you'll go. Okay, are you exhausted now? You are.
Yes,
huh?
Yes.
It was a long way.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, just filling up the tank.
Any boats? Any boats? But at least now, I've been pretty much, except for hunger, and I don't even care about hunger, there are no more possible interruptions.
Well, except for the plastic bags you forgot.
Oh, yeah,
floating here in the Amsterdam Canal.
We should find some big boat to hide behind, and then he will get all the bags.
Or it's throwing them at us.
That would be a bad... That's like a spy movie where there's a boat chase. Instead of leaving some oil slick or some smokescreen, you just leave some bags.
Yeah, we should tell this to the James Bond guys the next time they are planning.
We can write this to...
Amsterdam.
We can write it to the Karma Bank guys and say, look, here's a movie you can make. Boring boat chase. Amsterdam.
Yeah, give us your money. So what do you think of the Karma Bank project in general?
Well, I mean, you have to explain it a little bit to me, because I've been to the site and I understand that they strategically target, I don't know if the word target is correct, companies that are doing business but in bad ways, in unethical practices.
Right.
And so the idea is that if we all get together and we all consult, wow, this is an interesting boat, this kind of site, that these companies will eventually suffer in some aspect, you know, because we're organized. But on the one hand, that's fantastic. It's a good idea. And I've always, you know, a lot of us nowadays are concerned about what companies we buy from. I hear it all the time, even from people who aren't so politically conscious. Some people just say, oh, I go to the natural foods market. I don't really know why. I just feel better. And that's kind of a start.
Yeah,
you know, people feel better about buying more what should be more responsibly made products. So,
yeah, but then again, the Karma Bank point is that they're all the same anyway, because they're sort of part of the same financial systems and they're exchanging personnel and money all the time. So it's more about hitting the system in general, isn't it? So that's why they're putting up this stock market analysis, who to target first.
Now, what's not so great, and it's not Karma Bank's fault, is that, of course, the big investors, Wall Street, etc., they don't know what Karma Bank is, and a lot of them aren't interested. So it would be interesting if we could have people in power also join the masses, people who could really have effect. Because unfortunately, the activist community are not big investors.
No.
As far as I know.
No, they're more heading for the masses, but right now Karma Bank is not really a very popular project.
No.
Well,
and it doesn't have anything that's going to... Well, but why would a... You know, unless he suddenly, he or she, an investor, suddenly became worried about the world, then they might decide to think about... But otherwise, I think they would ignore a site like Karma Bank, and they can, and that's kind of the problem. So I think it's a great idea, and we'll see where it goes. But unfortunately, the level of effectiveness is very, very low. Just like my podcast or any podcast, your audience is... It's nice to think that so many people could listen and it could make a difference. Unfortunately, at least in the beginning, be it the first year or the first years, you're not going to have a big audience.
Well, what's a big audience? I mean, it doesn't really matter how many it is. It's much more important who it is. And right
now, that's a good point.
Many people are moving to podcasting. Well, I think there are many reasons why they do. Some of them just like radio. But some of them, like me, when I just see how I look at this myself, it's I'm looking for sources. And of course, the internet is filled with sources, mainly weblogs, and it's all text, and it's all, everybody writes the same thing.
Yeah, or points to each other.
It's very difficult to get to the original content. It's there as well, but it's a long process. So it actually, although in theory, oh, we are overtook by the bigger boat.
Yeah,
here.
That's okay.
In theory, in theory, you have everything. You have all the sources, but in a practical way, you have to spend a lot of time, on doing the research. And what's really rare in the blogosphere is well-written articles that are tying together lots of sources and presenting them. Although you could do that. But then, if you find such an article, you find it's really tiresome to follow. Because then you would have to like click all the links. There's sometimes really hidden, like these here links.
Yeah.
Somehow marked up words, but in that, when you read it, you don't really get the context. And a well-made podcast usually does a much better job in bringing together all the sources and especially the conclusions, because people can use their voice and they're much better in using their voice usually than written words. I mean, depends on the individual, of course. There are people who are much better at writing.
Right.
But in general, I think it's much easier for people to listen because voice is just the normal way of communication.
Yeah. And you could do so many other things while you listen. I mean, that's my thing.
That's it. And then a dialogue is also... It presents something that you can do in text. I mean, how many times have you read long interviews? And how many times have you read long interviews with more than two people?
Yeah.
It's so difficult to follow, but if you listen to the voices, it's much, much, much easier. And you get immediately, you get an impression on how these people are, what the way of talking is. And even if you don't see them, you can draw so much out of the voice.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and that's where I see potential in podcasting in general.
Yeah.
There's another party going on.
They're feeding the ducks as well.
They're feeding the ducks. Nice.
And I think more people, I mean, people...
As long as they're not throwing out the plastic bags, I'm happy.
People in general wave to everybody, as I was telling you, on the boat.
Yeah.
It's very nice, very communal feeling. People who would never look at you twice on land, when they're on a boat or they're on a houseboat, they will smile and wave. It's kind of weird. I had a bigger point, but I forgot it. Yeah, there's a lot of music going on.
Yeah, we should explain the context here.
Go ahead.
In case anybody is ever listening to this. We are in Amsterdam and we are on a boat.
Yeah.
And we are here on Bicycle Mark's boat and we are going through the canals of Amsterdam. And the canals are filled with boats today with crazy people like these. And we're of course the attraction because we are the guys with the headphones on.
This guy started motioning to me as if we perhaps have trouble speaking. he was doing sign language.
Can you hear us? Well, actually we can't really hear them.
You know, actually I just remembered that Queen's Day, and this is Queen's Night, going in a nacht, is a good night to, because of all the boats on the canals, we are going to be shaking all the time. It's a really good day to be seasickness, sorry.
Oh yeah.
So
I can feel it.
Somebody's boat alarm is going off.
Even the boat has alarm.
By the way, we are floating with boat insurance. That's very interesting.
We're floating?
I have boat insurance in my bag. If we hit somebody, we don't have to pay for it.
Oh.
I think, isn't that what it means? I have collision. So we're down on the Prinsengracht, down by the public library. If you've ever been to Amsterdam, we are just south of the Westerkerk. And we're very near to the Melkweg, which last night... Oh wait, no, Paradiso had the Flaming Lips last night. I'm not a fan, but my roommate went. So.
What is Flaming Lips?
Yeah, it was a popular band, I think, a long time ago, and it may not have even been that popular. But it's apparently they put on a very impressive show, so.
Boat people all over the place.
Yeah.
But we're the only ones who have a Portuguese flag.
Oh yeah, is it?
We're totally distinct, nobody can see it.
You can stick it in the plastic, probably, in the front. Just put it.
Yeah, I can try.
See if it fits into the front. Does it stay? We might have to tie a rope to it, actually.
I think it's okay. Make sure that's going to stay with us here.
Or maybe I'm supposed to have it in the back, actually. Here, hand it to...
Yeah, usually yes, but I fear that it would interfere with your operations.
I could find a way to incorporate the Portuguese.
But that's nice, isn't it? It works.
Yeah, but I think we're doing, like, we're breaking tradition or something, no?
Oh.
Who cares?
Yeah, we are podcasters. We are breaking with the tradition.
All right. If it stays, it's good. Otherwise, I got to figure something out.
This is... Oh, I can... Whoops. Oh, we're almost colliding.
Yeah,
here.
I need to get the hell away from this boat. It's okay. That was a little bit scary.
Yeah,
I really need to get away from
this real adventure. I expected something totally boring.
For anyone that's listening and thinking, what the hell is going on? Tim is in the front of the boat. I'm in the back. And he is adjusting the Portuguese flag, almost like he's just climbed a mountain. There's a lot of crap in the front of this boat, I admit. Or yeah. There's a big tarp. And we there's a tourism boat that turned right in front of me. And I'm so new to this business that I tried to just slow down and turn. But he made a lot of waves. And well, anyway, we almost hit a wall.
The flag is in place now. It lags a bit with... Ah, no, it's floating a bit. Yeah. That's nice. Okay, I made it.
Very good.
Yeah, and we're testing my portable podcasting equipment here.
Yeah,
and make sure to pretty well
to always have that oar ready in case we need to push against the wall.
Yeah, and fighting the dragons.
I've been operating a boat in Amsterdam for a total of 1 week. I mean, I have steered bigger boats, but not for so long. And even there was this drunk guy on the street when I parked my boat. And he looked down at me, and I don't know what I did that made me so obvious, but he said, in his, like, crouching over like he was going to throw up, he looks over with red eyes, and he says, "Is this your first time boating?" He could have said anything. He could have said hello. And I said, "No, it's my fourth time." And he said, what did he say? "Well, it's a nice day for it." So.
And was it? But summer hasn't really arrived here in Amsterdam, has it? I mean, we just had 1 day this week in Berlin where it was acceptable weather.
Yeah, I even wore shorts one of these days in the last week.
And before it was 6 months of winter. At least the feeling I have. Sort of lost the belief that anything
good will ever come.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I was haunted by bad weather even when I went to Tel Aviv. Yeah. I mean, it's not really the place where you would expect a storm to hit you once
and
you're
you
there.
You actually got rain in Tel Aviv, huh?
Yeah.
Winter.
It was a real storm. It wasn't winter.
But still.
But it was, bad weather. So I hope this...
You know, I don't really know what happens if we go this way. It's probably a bad idea.
This canal here.
Oh, yeah, I do know what happens. Okay, it's good.
Okay, so what happens?
Well, we're down by Leidseplein. And we're actually floating around behind the Calypso and the Milkweg. And the Marriott is down here. And we're going in the direction of the Holland Casino. And I mentioned that because tourists always end up at the Holland Casino. I don't know why, to gamble, I guess. Not that Holland is so famous for gambling, but it's something to do.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and maybe they always end up in the Paradiso because there are lots of interesting events going on usually.
Yeah,
on there.
That's true.
Yeah. It's actually... It's a traditional hacker place because one of the first, no, the first big Dutch hacker meeting took place in the Paradiso.
Did
back then in 1989,
wow.
Which was called the Galactic Hacker Party.
Okay.
I wasn't there, but it was sort of the kickoff for this tradition of doing something.
Oh, you know what this...
And they followed up 4 years later with the first camp. Which was, on a camping ground close to Amsterdam, which was called Hacking at the End of the Universe.
Oh yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah,
and yeah, that's where the tradition started, and then 4 years later, a separate place was HIP, Hacking in Progress. So they sort of stuck to this. Three-letter acronym thing
HAL.
Starting with an H. Yeah, HAL was the next, and they sort of broke up with the tradition.
With hope?
No.
<That's> more letters.
Yeah, well, that's the American version.
Okay.
It was always hope. No. What the Heck was the last?
Oh yeah.
The last event. So
that was.
They did it three times, and we in Germany sort of chose the date in between. So. They have been doing something every 4 years. We've been doing something every 4 years, so we made sure there's something going on in summer every 2 years. You can't do it every year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's see what the next event is going to be. But it was there have been very memorable events. For instance, at HIP 97, there was a group sitting and they have been they were scanning the PGP source code that has been exported from the United States.
Yeah.
You remember the problem that cryptographic software was sort of put under under military control because it was officially considered a weapon. That's how the US government tried to prevent of strong encryption leaving the country. So, and this was the work of Phil Zimmermann, who wrote the original PGP stuff. So what they decided was they were printing the source code on paper and exporting it. So this was covered under freedom of speech right, because it was paper and there was no discussion about it, that something that's printed is free speech.
Protected, yeah.
And protected. And then people have been scanning this in in a long process and actually made the program work again. And soon after, this law was dumped.
Okay.
So it was sort of the birth of free exchange for cryptographic software. And it wasn't really a bad idea for the American economy in general, because that was really a time where lots of cryptographic developers moved to Europe just because of this, and all the companies opened up European bureaus.
I'm going to let this tourism boat go by.
Oh, it's called MC Escher. With the appropriate Escher design.
Oh, you know, normally boat drivers smile and wave, but I think people are a little bit freaked out by the headphones.
Yeah, they are. I'm totally sure. They sort of...
But why? I mean, why are they so nervous?
She's smiling. Tourists are smiling. Everybody else is totally... He asked if you want to have something. Oops. I think he's inviting us for a coffee or so. I have no clue how he wants to give it to us. So what's going on?
I'm learning to drive stick shift.
Ah. Are you in second gear now?
I might just follow this guy. You know, I mean, if you get behind a boat this big, you may as well follow him.
And then?
Well, he'll clear traffic. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I'm sorry, we were having a good discussion, but I'm so distracted by driving, because honestly, I've driven for a week, like I said, but this is so busy today, and I'm not even in the main part yet. We're now driving in the direction of Kaiserskracht. Kaiserskracht. I have a very Belgian, if anything, American-Belgian accent in my Dutch.
You are from...
New Jersey?
New Jersey, but you're also from Portugal somehow. Yeah. Your parents are.
Caldas de Rainha. Yeah, that's where I'm registered. If you trace my address to my social security number in the Netherlands, you'll end up in Caldas de Rainha in Portugal, where my family has a small apartment.
So what's the Belgian touch now?
Oh, I don't know. Something about the way I choose to pronounce things. I mean, I have the majority of my Dutch accent, I believe, and no one ever knows for sure. You have to hear it from somebody else. But the majority of my accent is American. And then I have a few things that are not so American. Oh, shit with this.
Uh-huh. So now the big ship is breaking hard.
Yeah, he is.
Whoops.
Can you...
Save us? Yes.
So fucking annoying.
It's so busy. It's unbelievable. Let's it's like Autobahn. So everybody is going with these huge boats, completely equipped. Hello!
Hi.
With food and drinks and everything. It's funny.
Yeah, but I mean, I hate it. At least this boat rides on clean natural gas, it says. I want one of those engines.
But yeah, good idea that we're no longer following.
Oh, man. I just need to get away from these big boats. I really have to think twice about coning into that tomorrow.
Yeah, so I've been talking about the hacking scene being strong here in the Netherlands, and always was. But
Access for All wasn't. So okay, Access for All is now a internet provider company, communications company.
Well, it was from the start. That's where the name.
What's the
from.
Connection with the hacking community and Access
It
for
was
all?
Actually founded by the hacking community. So the people who were behind Hacktic, the Dutch hacker magazine, they sort of stopped doing the magazine publishing stuff and went for the business because they really wanted to do something. They wanted to stop talking, and then they founded Access for All, which was the first true internet provider who was really done by people who know what they're doing. I forgot the year they started, but it was very early, and so they had modem access for everybody.
Right.
And later on, they have been very played a very strong role, a very active part in defending privacy and in defending digital civil rights in a way. There have been various stories. The fight against Scientology was trying to ban information from the internet.
like the truth about the aliens, Scientology, you know. It's
no, it was like internal documents being leaked over the over Usenet, and there was some kind of long ongoing legal war on this. And Access for All was always protecting people who were hosting content on their sites, so they were not really, you know. Many service providers, usually if the police is coming or the state is saying like, oh, we've got to stop this, even if there's no law for it, they obey just up front.
Okay.
And that's something Access for All never did. In the end, Access for All was sold to KPN,
oh.
Telecom.
But they left it to a certain extent.
It is still called Access for All in its own brand name. And from what I know, it's generally in a good shape. So they're still sort of sticking to the history, although this might eventually fade out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is a kind of a DJ booth here.
Yeah, the party
Nobody
is just
wants
starting. Yeah, no. Yeah, but everybody's totally.
Maybe we should make up a story. You know, this is this is American Public Radio, because everybody respects that. This is American Public Radio. They only gave us enough money for this little red boat and two headsets.
Yeah, we're covering the whole Europe now. We're starting Amsterdam.
It's all part of Rupert Murdoch's new plan since he bought it. No, it's not true. He didn't buy it. All right.
No, this is real alternative media.
That's right.
With
I know.
Alternative
yeah.
transport.
Isn't it a shame, though, in a certain... Well, it's not a shame, but I always go back on what I say. You could walk the streets with a camera and the guy holding this boom mic, and people will respect you because you look like you have the right equipment for some important job. Now, if you were to walk around just yourself with just a boom mic, people wouldn't understand. And if you just carried a smaller mic, people really don't understand. So it's kind of strange how you...
Headphones help.
Headphones? Yeah.
Yeah, if you have headphones on, it looks much more professional.
Yeah. And I gotta say, it's very hard to do it alone. I've walked the streets with a little microphone coming out of my ear. Now, you could pretend you're on the phone, and that works to a certain extent. But if somebody listens to what you're saying, they realize you're not on the phone. And it's very difficult. It's I guess it's a cool exercise in performance. If you learn to stop worrying about what other people think, especially people on the street. I worry more about what the internet thinks than people on the street, which is a shame, really, because people on the street are near me.
What does the internet think?
Yeah.
Hello,
oh,
internet. Are you out there?
That's how you greet the... yeah.
What do you think?
Hello, internet.
Hello, internet. How do you call your listeners? I forgot.
I don't.
You just say hello. Don't
yeah,
you?
I don't have any... everyone. I call them everyone. Everybody out there. That's how I...
Matt has this wonderful...
Gentle audience.
General.
Gentle.
Gentle
audience.
Gentle audience.
I don't know who did that before. I think somebody did. Madge mentioned it once, but I don't know who did that. Gentle audience. Listen, turds. Listen, turds.
The content must be right.
The content. Right. But, yeah.
We're big fans.
We are, yeah. I think a lot of people are, and all this claim that, not to talk too much meta, as she would say, but all this claim that the show isn't popular, I think it's kind of crazy. I mean, whether it's extremely popular or not, the connection that it does have with the amount of listeners that it has is much stronger than most any connection with the program. I don't know. I just think it's a unique show and it has a good connection with people.
Yeah,
anybody who says
either you can't stand it at all or you're loving it.
Right.
I don't think there's anything in between.
No. Yeah.
And there are quite a few podcasts who just cover this in between people.
Right.
And Match definitely isn't one of them. And it's so personal. That's what I love about podcasting, that it's really personal. It really brings out the true spirit of the people.
Passing on my left the Foam Photography Museum. I don't know what special... I can see from here. Philip Lorca Di Corsia. Di Corsia. I don't know who that is, but he's on display. Or his work is on display.
Okay, sounds Italian to me.
Back to the topic. We are heading down towards the Goethe Institute. How do I say that?
Goethe.
Goethe Institute.
Ah.
Yeah, but it's... I'm going to turn before we get there.
Ah, okay.
It's down near the Amstel, which is one more block. It's a very large... It looks like a bank. Well, it looks very nice. It's a very classic building, so you could put a bank in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Goethe Institute. They usually have a very good hand in finding the excellent buildings. I've been to the Goethe Institute in Mexico and in Sao Paulo.
Oh, yeah. Of course, for anyone listening, the
Goethe latter one being the coolest.
Yeah.
That's
we're talking about awesome. The institute where German is taught. And it's funded by the government, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of like the
it's
French...
It's part of the foreign ministry, actually. Yeah. So they're funding it.
That's a very cool idea.
Doesn't this exist in other countries as well?
Depends. I don't think Portugal has one. And Portugal relies on its Portuguese communities to teach. My parents teach Portuguese at schools. Mm-hmm. The Netherlands has something, but I don't think they're in many countries. You know, I don't think they're... I mean, Alliance Française, every city. Not always by that name. Like here in Amsterdam, it's called the Maison Descartes. You can find me in the library every Tuesday. But not all countries have tried this. Like Spain doesn't have anything like this, I think. Mm. Oh, Cervantes. Oh, no. I don't think they do. Well, I think it's a shame. I think all languages should do it if they can afford it.
Yeah, the Goethe Institute, they're really helpful. They're very open for new ideas from my experience.
Oh, is this a one-way canal?
Oh, there's such a thing as a one-way canal?
There was.
There was? And now...
Because I got pulled over on Queen's Day. Maybe it was a special day. I got pulled over on Queen's Day 3 years ago in this boat when my friend owned it. And the police pulled us. We were drinking beers. Who knows what we were doing, but we got pulled over.
And the police came in the boat.
No, they just pulled next to us in their own boat.
Okay.
We ran into a police boat.
Yeah, but that was a police boat. Not
yeah,
a
yeah. So they pulled us over, okay. So I'm a little nervous because I'm used to, you cannot operate a vehicle while drinking. And I realize that's not the case here, but I'm still a little nervous. And they said, hello. They greeted us, and we saluted them with our beers. And they said, you're going backwards. And we said, oh, what should we do? I said, oh, just turn around. Have a good day. And that was back when police in Amsterdam weren't so damn serious. Although there's still plenty of cops that aren't so damn serious. But
it changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, they're a lot more strict. I'm either that or I'm not getting the breaks. And I don't get really harassed that much. It's just people around me seem to. And they're just more strict with rules. I mean, every morning I see, well, people run red lights. Certain red lights, bikers I'm talking about, cyclists. There are certain red lights that are useless. At certain times. There's nobody coming. You can see it. It's very obvious. And some people are extreme rule followers, and they will wait, they will wait, they will wait. But some people are thinking, well, I can see no car is coming. This light is taking too long. I'm going to go anyway.
Yeah, I'm using my own brain.
And depending on the situation, this could be dangerous, but if you can see very clearly, I really feel like this rule shouldn't be so enforced. I see at 9 o'clock in the morning, people heading to work in their business suits, being pulled over by other bike cops, or the cops will stay waiting next to a light, waiting for you to run it. And it's just like, wow, is there no other important crime at 9 o'clock in the morning? I don't know if there is or not. Is there not like a breakfast to be eaten or something? Or go give some tourist directions. But they actually stand behind certain lights that aren't even that dangerous. And they seem to choose the ones that are the easiest, that are clearly you should run because it's obvious no car is coming. And they just pull you over on your way to work, make you a little later, give you a ticket for, I think it's 30 euros or something. And then you're off.
Yeah, I mean, it's an excellent way to sustain the funding of the police.
Yeah.
And I once talked to a police girl who was taking part in a speed control session. And they were standing right in the heart of Berlin at this huge Straße der 17. Juni, which is the huge road in the middle that leads to Brandenburger Tor.
Yeah.
They were standing there like in the early evening, so it was getting dark, and it's a huge road. It's like 5 lanes,
mm-hmm.
and they are not even marked.
Yeah.
Well, actually, now they are marked, but back then they weren't. And it's you know, it's a huge road. It's going for 2 kilometers without any roads facing it, and nothing. There's no problem with traffic. They just go.
Yeah.
And nobody is running over this street as well because nobody is there. It's just surrounded by the park.
Yeah.
So it's totally normal that people get over the speed limit.
Yeah.
Standing there, and I talked to the police lady, and I said, like, standing here is totally pointless. I mean, everybody knows that
yeah.
speed limit is not honored here that much. And she looked at me and said, like, yeah, we know. Yeah.
But
we've been taught to do this, and although we don't like it, we're just doing it. And of course, and she sort of admitted that this was just done to get money into the system.
It's very strange, you know?
It's taxing, in a way.
It's like, do they not have enough money? I mean, they do get their taxes.
Who
By the way, this is the French Institute. The
who Ali has enough money?
The government of Berlin.
I missed the Goethe Institute now.
Oh, yeah, no, I turned before it. We arrived at it.
Ah, okay. So
this is the Maison des Cartes with the French flag.
The
yeah, it's very big.
Oh
nice
yes.
gardens in the middle. I honestly go there to see if I can make... I mean, I have students that I can talk to, but I'm looking for people who live here. If I can make French-speaking friends. And I haven't. Except for the librarian.
So we're passing a tunnel now. I must say it's a really totally a different view you get of
yeah.
the city once you're traveling on the canals.
Yeah. I once had a similar feeling. I used to do some bike tours, of course, sort of, what do you call them, benefits. So there was the multiple sclerosis bike tour of New York City, of Manhattan. And I would ride it. I rode it for a few, like 1 or 2 years. And there, they close the road. And you get to ride right down the middle of Fifth Avenue in the morning. You know, they do this for an hour or two. And it's incredible to see the same city that you've always walked through from the middle of the street riding. And you don't have to move. You can just keep riding down the middle of the street. It was incredible. And it was early, of course, one Sunday morning. That's the only time they have permission to do this. So you see no people walking, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar feeling to when I ride down a boat, a canal on boat here. Oh, now we're going to hit some...
waves.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting seasick. Is there any pirates here? Cool. Just a pirate boat show up and take over. Stand and deliver.
So how many times have you been to Amsterdam? Many.
Yeah, many times. Wouldn't say I know the city very well, but I've been many, many times. I've been here for this and that. Usually parties. All my
yeah.
Dutch friends are going crazy with parties every now and then.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why. And yeah, and it's also this hacker community. There are so many bright people here, and they are they're very good in what they're doing, and they have style. And the Dutch and German hacker scene have been very close together from the beginning.
Yeah,
they used to come over to the Chaos Communication Congress in Hamburg back then, very early, and sort of decided doing something. So this Galactic Hacker Party I mentioned was sort of the result of them coming to Germany first and seeing what's being done in Hamburg.
Yeah. By the way, this segment of the... Oh, no, you know what? No, I don't want to go that way.
Oops.
It's too crazy. This segment of the under the bridge just now, it's like a ride in Disney World where you go... It's just bumping and the water is so rough.
Just hear this part.
Yeah. I think it's because many boats just passed. Well, 3 or 4. Or is it the wind? Is there a storm coming at sea?
Hurricane...
Yeah, no, I think there's still a lot of creative people in Amsterdam, and sometimes I like to pretend that I'm here because I want to make the city a more creative place. So if I do anything creative, and I do some things, right, I hope that I contribute to this big pile of creative. And I also think that a lot of creative people left because it's getting more expensive and it's harder to just start things up here. So I think a lot of creative people left, and I understand why they left, and I kind of feel like I'm not in a position where I need to leave, so I want to stay and try and keep it cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I see so many, like, even the traditional things like squat a squat house, you know, squatted apartments. And I don't know the stories for all of them, but some of them are wonderful places with, they don't just provide a place for people to live, but they're also art spaces, they're performance spaces, yeah, like in Berlin. And actually, you'll tell me about that in a second, what's been happening. I've seen a lot of them also evicted in the last years, and a lot of times for reasons that aren't that important, or at least are excuses to get them out. And it's like this, it's usually the city government, and the city government wants to do something else with the building, so they find some excuse, some technicality, and they kick them out by force, you know, arresting everybody, very, very, very physical. Of course, squatters can also be very violent when their house is under attack. So not everybody is innocent, but it's really sad to see, because I think years from now, even the tourism fans of the city are going to go, what was that thing that we used to have that was unique? One of the things. And someone's going, oh, squatting. Yeah, we don't have so many of those left. Now, I've said this a few times, and friends who are involved with squatting say, no, it's alive and well. But I see so many classic squat houses being closed up. But anyway, so in Berlin, you used to have a lot of squats after 89.
Oh, yes. I mean, the whole eastern part of the city was squatted, sort of.
And have a lot of these maintained?
Like, Well,
when the wall came down, the initial situation was totally weird, because there was, of course, many people have left for the west.
Yeah.
So there were quite a few empty flats that are even were even equipped on whatever phone lines sometimes.
Yeah.
But there were also lots of empty houses, which the socialist government didn't really care about any longer, didn't manage to maintain, I don't know. So, of course, all the creative people were so happy and moved into the eastern part, and everything became a club, a party place.
Oh yeah.
It was amazing. So in each street, literally, you had 7 clubs going on, one for each weekday. Yeah, there was one location for Monday, one for Tuesday,
yeah,
and so on.
Cool.
And everything was changing every 4 weeks. So what was valid 4 weeks ago, yeah, you had to check out completely from scratch if you were not following it all the time. So it was very alive, very much change, and so many crazy things going on, because people could just squat everything, from flats to huge
old
industry
factory,
buildings,
yeah, yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
And that was, and the impact on culture, it's very easy to see. For instance, well, wall came down 89, and it was also the time when electronic music sort of took over. So yeah, house music was moving from Britain into Germany, and Germany was very open for this process. And
yeah,
because Berlin was such an ideal point for new clubs that could open, techno scene and electronic music scene flourished,
yeah,
in an amazing way, and all these things that came out of it, Love Parade and so on,
oh yeah,
were just more or less a consequence of the infinite possibilities that were available in Berlin.
Yeah.
And for many years it sort of stayed this this way. Of course, eventually.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. Calm down. This boat is... They just
I'm
honk for
than
fun.
You.
I need a horn. I'll ring my bicycle bell. Cling, cling. Hello, I'm Bicycle Mark. Nobody cares.
Go
on
away.
The canal. Get out of the way.
Yeah, that's what happened. Of course, now it changed, and many houses were reconstructed, rebuilt, everything. People kicked out. There have been some really crazy squatting times in a place called known as Mainzer Straße.
Yeah, right back.
You might have heard about it.
Yeah,
And that was sort of a culmination of everything, and it was a whole block of buildings that were totally squatted from top to bottom, and they sort of were establishing their own republic there, huh, if you want.
Yeah,
and it was a very tense situation, and well, one day the police decided to move in, and this was war.
Yeah,
it was war going on for 2 or 3 days burning cars, and they have rebuilt these houses to be like a medieval castle. Yeah, that they could close all the holes and have weaponry ready for access hanging on the wall and so on.
Yeah.
It was scary. Yeah, the war went on for 3 days and then they cleared everything, of course, in the end, because there was no way of winning. But yeah, that was strong.
Has this
but it's part of the Berlin culture, and it's the good thing about Berlin is that up to the top of the politicians, I'm totally sure about this, everybody knows that this diversity is very important for the city. If they are kicking out every club, and they're kicking out, and they don't leave space for open development, and if they would look too much at rules and laws and everything, they would just kill the city.
Yeah.
And but this is what's making Berlin so attractive.
Unique. Yeah. Yeah.
To
yeah.
many yeah. creatives.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough over the past.
And it has even increased in the recent years. That's funny. The attractiveness is the sort of. I think in Berlin, the feeling is more like, ah, well, the good days are gone, but the word is still spreading in a way. So people are still coming and contributing to the scene, so it's not that bad.
Uh-huh.
I like it.
I've been lucky enough over the past year to. I get a lot of jobs fixing language, English, in papers of professors, and sometimes the papers are very boring. But I got involved somehow with an agreement, this school of sociology here in Amsterdam that was working with one of the universities in Berlin. I don't remember which one, probably the Freie or whatever it is.
A few.
Yeah. And they were doing studies about urban spaces and creative spaces. Yeah. And what makes certain places successful creative cities and what makes certain places unsuccessful or lose the creativity. And everybody did a different focus. Some people even went beyond Amsterdam and Berlin and they went to New York and they talked about different neighborhoods in New York and how come they were successful to become art spaces and how come they got so expensive. And one person did a whole story on one of the famous streets. I don't know if it was the one you named. What was the one you named in Berlin?
Mainzer Straße.
I don't think it was Mainzer Straße.
I don't think.
Was there one like orange, like Oranje?
Oranienburger Straße or Oranienstraße. We actually got two of them. Oranienstraße is the traditional center of Kreuzberg, which was always the creative part of West Berlin. And Oranienburger Straße is
the other street
that, well, quickly became famous. After the war came down. And it was a very quick history, because first it was cool and had all the interesting clubs. Then many, many restaurants went in and the art scene went in. So it's crowded with galleries.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All over the place. And galleries, galleries, galleries. You can't just
and the
stepping
study
into one.
The study talked about fancy shops that have appeared.
Yeah, and now it's becoming a rich community, sort of.
Yeah.
Or rich, or at least for rich people for buying expensive stuff and so on.
Yeah.
And that moved. Yeah, that was very quick.
Yeah.
Quick development.
Yeah, one of the studies was about that, and I thought it was very interesting. It talked about, it interviewed people who had lived there in 91, who had squatted certain apartments, and then people who gradually couldn't afford to be there anymore. And they interviewed people who owned famous restaurants, I don't remember, which had been just sort of do-it-yourself restaurants.
Yeah.
Going to turn down this canal. Where am I?
It's getting a bit freezing now.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll turn back in and we'll make an approach to my home. I like these side canals. Oh, here comes somebody. Oh. I gotta get my light out soon too.
Fancy boat. Your light? You have a.
It's under your seat. But don't worry yet.
Ah. That's still bright enough.
Hello.
Peace, love, and ice cream. Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's the Ben and Jerry's boat.
The Ben and Jerry's boat.
This is a great view. Straight ahead, all you see is little pedestrian bridges, trees that are now green, boats on both sides of us, and the sky is a mix of blue and gray and little clouds and the sun has set. It's fantastic. And I've been here for 4 years and I still think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. It's fantastic.
I keep waiting for the year that I wake up and I go, no, this is not fantastic anymore. I need to go.
But so you're here for 4 years now?
Yeah, 4 years. But as a regular working person, 2 years. My first 2 years were as a student. So little bit different, like starting again with social networks a little bit. Well, anyway,
I wonder how this motor sound is going to turn up in the recording.
Yeah, that I'm curious. Well, as long as we are louder, well, you can put a special filter.
Experiment with it.
The engine filter. What do you use for editing? That's a former military boat. They bought it from the military.
Ah.
Yeah, it's a real fuel eater, gas guzzler.
I believe it.
Yeah.
You had a question? No. Did you?
I don't remember.
It's gone.
Oh, I was going to have a comment. Speaking of things like chaos communication, etc. I've never been to a HOPE conference in the U.S., and I'm from the area, and I've always listened to them.
Next chance is in July.
I know, but it's such an expensive time to go to New York.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's the summertime rates, so what a trip that would cost maybe 500 euros in the winter, of course, in the winter, in the summer it can cost 1,000. Hmm. And I never go to the U.S. in June. It's just July, even worse. Hmm. So, I don't know. I need to find some organization that will fund me to go to HOPE. Because I would love to go to HOPE. I would love to talk about podcasting or anything. I'll talk about anything.
Apply for a talk.
Yeah.
Apply for a talk.
But they don't fund, do they?
I know they try to do. I don't know how good their funding is this time.
Yeah.
Because
they're very open to people coming and choosing topic to speak about. And I wanted to speak a little bit about, you know, of course, citizen journalism, but as it relates to podcasting. But I don't think this is the year. I'm pretty sure this isn't the year for me. Maybe next year. Well, that'll be HOPE 7.
HOPE is every 2 years.
Ah, okay. Yeah, the last HOPE I was here. Yeah.
But the name they chose this time is good. I love it.
I don't remember. What is it?
Well, it's just HOPE number 6.
Oh.
which probably not everybody understands, but whoever's seen The Prisoner, you have. You
know?
The Prisoner is in...
No.
Okay, I'm not getting the joke now.
No.
The Prisoner is an old, of the 60s, an old TV series about a guy who was quitting. That's where the whole series starts with. He's quitting his job at the Secret Service and he just wants to go. But they don't let him. And we're at the gas station again.
Yeah, I know. I hate going back the same way I came, but that's what I'm doing. Anyway, yeah.
So they get him. They sort of catch him at his home and put him on an island.
Yeah.
And this island is totally crazy and it's a total fascist way of having him. So with happy people who believe everything that's on the news and so on. Mm-hmm. And he's stuck on this island. So the whole series is about how he can get away from there and dealing with the system and trying to find a way on how to break free. And nobody has a name. Everybody's just a number and he is number 6.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's this famous quote, no, I'm not a number, I'm a free man.
Okay.
And so he's basically dealing with number 2, who is the visible boss, but number 2 always changes. So I don't know how many number 2s there are, but at least 10.
Okay.
And because he's always winning the battle, sort of. Although he can't get away from the island, they are not able to break him as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So number 2 always fails, and nobody knows who number 1 is until the end. And it's a total classic. I can only recommend that you have a look at it.
Okay.
So that's the analogy they're taking there. HOPE number 6.
Okay.
I'm a free man.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, we're out here. This is the Nassaukade. And I just gave somebody a ride from here the other day. And this near this bridge. I have a friend that lives right there on the corner, plays in the Frisbee League with me, and this is police headquarters up ahead.
Frisbee League?
Yeah, the Ultimate Frisbee League. It's very big in Germany, too.
Ultimate Frisbee League?
Yeah, so seven players against seven players.
Okay.
Looks a little bit, sometimes, like American football, but no tackling. Yeah. It's just the idea that when you have the ball, well, it's a little different from American football. When you have the Frisbee, you shouldn't run. You have to find somebody open to throw it to, and the idea is that eventually you get to the other side of the field. And every city in the Netherlands, well, every big city, pretty much, well, has a team. So, yeah, all your Groningen and your Utrecht and your Amsterdam. Amsterdam has at least six teams that compete nationally. And then of those six, most of them also compete internationally. And the teams that they compete against, if they're not from Brussels and Ghent, they're also from Germany. From there's quite a few from Munich. I have a friend here now. He moved here. He's from Dresden. And there's, I guess Berlin has a team. I don't know. But it's just, you know, people playing frisbee. It's very intense. It's a lot of running. And they all, this apartment up here, where that woman is closing the door above, it's all frisbee players from Australia, from the UK, and Dutch.
Although American football is not that popular, but the general idea sort of manages to slip into other sporting types.
Yeah.
For instance, in Berlin, there is a place, one of the places you should definitely have to should have a look at when you're there.
Yeah.
It's called the Sea Base, and it's the story is that there has been a space station, which eventually was pushed back in time 10 million years, and then it crashed, and it crashed where at the place we now know as Berlin. So it's lying below Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And things like the famous Berlin TV tower is nothing but the antenna of the space station.
Okay.
So there's the sea base, which is a location in Berlin where people are busy in excavating what's left and analyzing the history of the sea base. And one of the things they found out when they were looking into the sea beam central computer was that there was a game being played on the space station.
It's a funny sign.
Called Jugger. Which one? This one? Canal? Bike?
It's a tour company that with the big boats. And it's like, I don't think it's an official sign. Somebody put it there like, don't come this way, tour boats, because we don't like you. Because they would...
Okay.
This neighborhood isn't a touristy neighborhood. Anyway, yes?
Where was I? Yeah, Jugger. And actually the idea was, of course, derived from a movie called The Juggers. The Juggers. And it's, I don't know, I can't really tell you the exact rules, but it's, there's no ball, but there's a skull, and you have to bring it to the other side, and there's some rules. So it's basically the idea of American football in a way. It was very funny to see, because when they play it, they're all equipped in this medieval style, you know, Arnold
armor.
Schwarzenegger armor, and yeah, weird clothing.
Yeah.
And marks on the skin. Very funny to see. Yeah, that's a much calm. These houseboats, I mean, they're so...
normal looking, or they look like square
no,
little...
No, I mean, this is totally high-tech, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, a lot of them.
This is really the modern version of a houseboat. They're no longer a boat.
Right, it's just a cement slab.
Yeah, concrete base and...
Yeah. Yeah, you have a few that are still, of course, boats, but you have many, many who are just slabs of concrete and a house built on top, and sometimes two-floor houses built on top, two-story.
Mm-hmm.
And what's nice is, on the canal side, normally, they leave these windows open. You see here, we're looking at a houseboat, and the opposite side of the houseboat to the street, it's closed, so you can't look in.
Yeah.
But on our side, we can look in. It's almost like, if you're on a boat, you have the right to invade my privacy.
Yeah.
I trust you. Which in some ways is anti-theft. Or anti-tempting someone to break in. They assume that people on boats don't want to break in.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful boats, beautiful houses.
Yeah. I always wonder, oh look, there's my sister boat. You see, it's identical.
Ah, that one.
Yeah. It's in pretty slightly better condition, I think. Although mine's all right. Could just use some paint.
Yeah,
some
it works.
Some new plastic nubs. Look at this. This looks like
if
a little.
You roll it.
There's another military boat here. Very tough. Where probably a big V8 engine in the back. That one probably operates
monsters.
On diesel.
Huge monsters. This is sound seeing deluxe. Although the microphone, the small dynamic microphones don't really catch much of the atmosphere.
No?
Do you think so?
I can hear a lot of water sounds.
Yeah.
I can even almost hear a bird.
Yeah, but it's not a condenser mic. Condenser
What's amazing is these headphones isolate a lot of sound. So this engine doesn't sound so loud, which it is quite loud.
Mm-hmm.
And the birds, there's actually a lot of bird sounds here. But I don't hear them. All right, we're arriving at our destination.
I hear the birds.
What I'd like to do is take the headset off. Is that all right? Pass it to you, because I'm arriving.
Yeah, okay. We'll just end the session here, which was a good recording, and it even worked until the end. Okay, and we're almost full here. So, goodbye.